Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, Dr. Jen Collins on the future of dentistry. She works with Dental Care Ireland as their clinical director, and they're looking to change how dentists operate to try and protect their mental and physical health more. I'll also be joined by meditation master David G on the moment that made him change course from New York stockbroker to teaching millions how to meditate. And I'll also be meeting the trio behind the Yoga Picnic to find out why the festival reminds people about the power of connection. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, I got to make our annual trip to Inishbofin, and it provided once more the peace of the island, the weather, the fun we have with the other families, white sands, clear waters, fishing, cycling, laughing, eating. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, mixed in with family time, kids away from screens, out on the rocks. Love it. And I know that not everyone can get away, but where you can, I think it's so important that we take ourselves out of our routine. I was lucky to get two trips in last month, a weekend in Budapest with a couple of my girlfriends and then the family trip to Inishbofin. And it really does energise you. I was laughing with the girls when I was in Budapest. For some reason, when you've a weekend coming up and you know there's going to be a few drinks and you know there's going to be a bit of trekking around and you're thinking of the airport, you think to yourself, oh, I could really do without this now. Why do we do that about like a very privileged trip away? But you do it anyway. Your body just says it anyway. And then when you're there, you're like, oh my God, this is me. And I do think we need it. And you don't necessarily have to get on a plane to get away and get out of your routine. But I really do think it recharges you. It replenishes your soul. And we are actually so lucky in this country. There are plenty of beautiful places where you can do even a night. So this is your cue to check it out. You can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, Dr. Jennifer Collins graduated as a dentist in 2004. Since then, she's worked in private practice with an interest in cosmetic, restorative and implant dentistry. She's also clinical director of the Dental Care Group and is keen to support both clients and dentists within the industry. She joins me in studio now. Well, Jen, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Claire. Thanks for having me.
And you do, of course, have fabulous teeth. I mean, that's important, isn't it? That goes with the territory.
Yes, it's a given. We have to have good teeth.
And did you always want to be a dentist?
Yeah, so I think I did. My mother is a doctor. She still works as a doctor. She's in her mid-70s and works in Limerick Regional. So as a child and teenager, I always wanted to work in healthcare. And she thought for me, dentistry would be a good career choice because I had the personality for it. And she thought the working conditions would be quite favourable for me as a woman. So at 17, I started dentistry and was carted off to the UK. And thankfully, I've never looked back.
Wow. And so what's the difference, I suppose? I mean, we're going to get into the life of a dentist in a moment and some of the changes you're trying to make within the industry to protect mental and physical health of dentists. But I suppose compared to working in a hospital, there is a sort of an end time and a home time.
That's right. So in theory, in dentistry, we have a start and a finish to our day. So whereas in medicine, there's a lot of on-call, there's a lot of evening work, a lot of weekend work. So as dentists, thankfully, luckily, we have a working day that starts and ends. There's some dentists who will work in hospitals and do emergency work, but for the most part, you know, we finish our day hopefully not having done any harm and having helped lots of people. And it's quite a good career choice, especially for women who might have families. It's quite conducive to work-life balance.
And I didn't realise that all dentists are self-employed.
That's right. Yeah, it's interesting. For the most part, unless you work in a hospital or in the HSE, we are self-employed. So we look after our own accounts and all that kind of stuff. We manage our own diaries, our own days. And the other side of that is we have to be mindful of our mental and physical health and make sure we take our breaks and take our holidays.
Now, your mother said you had the personality of a dentist. So what did that mean? I mean, obviously, you're a very friendly, affable person. Is that what it is? Because you have to put some people at ease. People are terrified of the dentist, aren't they? Some people.
Yeah, lots of people actually. So lots of people have phobias and anxiety around going to the dentist. So as a dentist, you have to be quite patient. You have to be affable, as you mentioned, and friendly because you want to connect with people and you want them to trust you. You also have to be quite resilient and tenacious yourself because there's a lot of the work is quite manual and physical. So you have to know what you're doing. You have to think on the spot. You have to have the mindset for dentistry. And if you have the personality and mindset for it, it's a really, really enjoyable career.
Well, I always felt really lucky. In my family, we used to always go together. My dad, my mom, me, my brother and sister, one by one. And we adored the dentist. He's since passed on. We go to the same practice now and there's a lovely dentist there as well. But I think that really took the fear away from me. I know if people have to have a lot of work done, I can see why it could be a bit intimidating. But I always, it was like a family day out for us. How times have changed. How has the industry changed since you qualified 20 years ago?
So it's changed massively. So when I started out, we were using paper records. We didn't even have computers in our surgery, whereas now it's all computerized. We have digital X-ray systems. Our technology has improved massively. We have digital scanners. We are embracing AI. We have AI technology now in lots of practices. So we are using AI technology to help read our X-rays. So the profession as itself has come on leaps and bounds. The quality of the work we're doing is amazing. We would be able to really make big changes to people's mouths with, you know, not as much effort as it would have taken 20 years ago. So patients have changed as well, as you can imagine. So in 20 years, patients have become much more conscious about having healthy teeth and gums. So they know that a healthy mouth is a healthy body. They're a lot more informed about their teeth and the health of their teeth. They have much more of an interest in cosmetic dentistry.
Yeah, that's huge now, isn't it? Having that Hollywood smile. But I'm interested in what you said about a healthy mouth is a healthy body. How important is oral health for your overall health?
Hugely, hugely important. So people who have healthy gums generally are healthy in themselves. So gum disease is linked to a lot of systemic diseases and different conditions, and we know that for a fact. So it's very, very, very important that people keep not just their teeth healthy, but also their gums healthy. Because we know there's a lot of links between gum disease and different conditions now.
And so if you're spitting blood into the sink, is that a red flag?
So that would be a sign that you'd have gum disease, so gingivitis, which would be very, very common. And gum disease would be a reversible condition for the most part. Some people have a more severe form of gum disease called periodontal disease, which can lead to bone loss and tooth loss. So that's a big red flag.
So because I have young children, I'm constantly saying how important it is to brush our teeth morning and evening. But is there a right and a wrong way to do it? Should it be before breakfast, after every meal, for how long? Because that's the basics. Are we getting that right, do you think, in general?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think more than ever now, patients are so conscientious when it comes to their kids' teeth, even more so than when it comes to their own teeth sometimes. So when it comes to children, the three things to think about is number one, diet, what your child is eating. Number two, toothbrushing. How often a day, once or twice a day, etc., for 2 to 3 minutes. And number three, fluoride, so a good toothpaste. So to go back to the first point, when it comes to diet, it's sugar that causes cavities. So if you or your child never brushed their teeth ever, they would have no cavities if they didn't ingest sugar. So sugar causes cavities. So you'd have other issues like gum disease and whatnot if you didn't brush your teeth, but you wouldn't actually have cavities. So diet is the number one cause of decay in children and adults. So if you look at the sugar you have in your diet and cut it back where you can and look at your hidden sugars and kind of moderate it somewhat, you are less likely then to have cavities long term. When it comes to toothbrushing, twice a day, ideally you'd brush your teeth. The big brushes at nighttime, that's when you really brush your teeth well. Obviously, it's important to brush your teeth in the morning as well, but really, often when people brush their teeth in the morning, they're doing it after they eat. So really, they're brushing the food off their teeth. So it does no harm, but the real big brush is at nighttime. And then when it comes to toothpaste, a good fluoride toothpaste is paramount. Mouthwashes are not so important for children in particular, but a good toothpaste, you can't go wrong.
Interesting. And it's pretty much the same for adults then. Same advice.
Exactly.
Stands.
Exactly. Yeah.
And are there daily habits that we might not know about that are causing damage to our teeth?
Yeah. So one would be, to go back to the toothbrushing, rinsing your mouth with water after you brush your teeth is not good. Basically,
Whoa. You
want to leave the toothpaste sit on your teeth. So brush your teeth, spit out the toothpaste into the sink and then keep the remainder in your mouth and the toothpaste will work on your teeth overnight.
That is mind-blowing. I'm always rinsing. Okay, yeah. That's a very interesting one.
Yeah.
Is there an issue with vaping on our teeth?
More so gums. more so the gum. So vaping would be considered, first of all, we don't have many studies yet on vaping. It's such a new concept that our research is quite limited when it comes to oral health and vaping. It would be considered marginally better than smoking, but not good overall. So we're still learning about vaping and the impact on gums. So it's a kind of watch this space, in the watch this space territory. But yeah, there would be a link between vaping and gum disease.
Very interesting. So I mentioned earlier that you are clinical director of Dental Care Ireland, and you're really trying to change the industry for dentists, and in particular care for their physical and mental well-being. Tell us a bit about that.
So what we saw in dentistry over the last few years is a lot of dentists are sometimes compromising on their own physical and mental health in order to care for their patients. So we have 180 dentists working in Dental Care Ireland, and I would speak to lots of them regularly. And what I found was we had dentists who were working through lunch, not taking breaks, working late, trying to accommodate patients, trying to do the right thing by their patient, but perhaps not doing the right thing by themselves. So what we've been big supporters of is dentists managing their working day better in order to benefit themselves as well as benefiting their patients. So taking their mid-morning break, taking a good lunch hour, going outside the surgery, going for a walk, getting some fresh air, taking a rest from the work. Also, we looked at the working day of a dentist. Are our dentists getting enough time per patient? And if not, how can we change that? Will we extend all the appointments? Will we book less patients for these dentists in a day? What's causing them stress, and how can we mitigate that somewhat? So we also looked at the working week of dentists. So we would be 60% female in the group. And we found that the majority of our dentists, upwards of 100% of our dentists, will work a 4-day week or less. And that's made a big difference to dentists, because now we're finding that having that extra day off a week really lends well to their mental health. It's really making a big difference for them.
Because there have been big issues with dentists and mental health, which is something else I wasn't aware of.
That's right, yeah. And a lot of it, there's a propensity towards worry and stress in dentistry. And that can be down to the actual nature of the work is quite intense, as you can imagine. So we're working in a really small part of the patient's body all day long. We could be doing a root canal treatment, which will take 2 or 3 hours. We could head straight into dealing with a trauma case. So the work is can be quite complex. But actually what I have found in the group when talking with others, that a big issue dentists were having is the social isolation around the job. So if you think about it, as dentists, we'll often work in the same space for years on end. So we'll work in the same corner of the same room, in the same building, on the same street for sometimes decades. And that's quite challenging for anybody. So what we found was by helping our dentists connect, by supporting them, by giving them what they need, by giving them better equipment or better materials, whatever they need, that was helping their working day. And by organising different events, hands-on events, webinars, seminars, giving people a safe space to talk, that's really conducive to better mental health for our dentists also.
You are looking at possibly changing how a dentist surgery looks so that there may be more than one dentist working in an open plan area. And that might freak some people out, but you're going to find a way. So it's a bit like I'm imagining first class on an aeroplane, you know, where the little bit comes around. So you are private, but you just want to open it up. You're right. I never even thought about my dentist sitting in that one tiny space for decades.
Yeah. And it can be quite lonely, because even though we're seeing people every day, we actually aren't really talking to patients. Now, I know I'm terrible for talking to patients when I'm actually working on them. So you might have had that experience with your
dentist. Because we can't answer back.
No, but then if we don't talk to them, we don't talk to anybody.
Yeah.
So for us, a big part of our day is actually chatting to patients and seeing someone come in, you know, who you might know 10, 15 years. You're delighted to see them. You're dying to chat to them. You know they can't respond, but you're just going to go for it anyway, because that's probably the highlight of your day. So what I find what I found is it can be quite a lonely profession because of the nature of the role. So what we're doing is we're looking at the surgeries, we're looking at the surgery spaces and the ergonomics of each surgery, where we can adapt the room we are. we are adapting lots of our spaces into kind of an open plan setup and adopting open door policies between patients. So between your patient appointments, we keep our doors open and we can wander around each other's surgeries, having the chats, talking about our day, also discussing cases, getting advice on something. That's really nice, a nice way to learn as well. And it's nice to chat and to catch up with your colleagues.
Because they sound like really small changes, but they have a really big impact, because suicide rates can be quite high among dentists, which is a fairly sobering statistic.
Yeah. And I remember hearing that fact when I was in college, and we couldn't really believe it. We didn't really understand why, because we were so delighted with ourselves in college having the crack. We thought, gosh, what are we heading into? You know, and actually, it's only when you're working as a dentist, you realise the challenges. But I think the newer generation coming up now are very aware of their mental and physical health. They know what they need to do, more so than I did 20 years ago. And I think the changes we're making as a group and as a profession are all very beneficial to dentistry. And I also feel a happy dentist is a good dentist, and a good dentist is going to benefit their patients. So a happy dentist will lead to happy patients. And I think that's good for everybody.
Well, thank God your mum said that to you all those years ago, and look at you in there changing it all for the better. Dr. Jen Collins, thank you so much for coming on. For more information, you can go to dentalcareireland.ie.
Thanks, Claire. Thank you.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, the yoga picnic is taking place on Sunday, July 7th at Lilliput House on the banks of Loch Ennell in Westmeath. It's a day of community, connection and vitality. It was set up by Mary Gardner, Katie Harrison and Alice Harrison, and they join me in studio now. Well, ladies, you're all very welcome.
Hi.
Thank you.
How are you?
Delighted to be here. Lovely to be here, yeah.
So Mary and Alice, you set it up originally. Tell us a little bit about that conversation and how it went from a conversation to thousands of people in a field.
Yeah. So yeah, well, we were, we're both yoga teachers, as is Katie, and we wanted to set up something that, celebrated yoga in Ireland and kind of instill positive wellbeing practices for people. And it kind of was supposed to be a picnic locally, and we would have a few yoga classes and that, but it really just developed from there because people, I suppose there was the demand there for it, and there was loads of amazing teachers that we wanted to have there. And so we had 150 people at our first one. And then it was a beautiful day, and it's on Loch Ennell, which is a beautiful lake near a forest and everything at Lilliput House. So it was just this most gorgeous, serene location, and people just had the most beautiful day. And then it just, I suppose the next year it just grew and grew, and we had 1,000 people then the second year. And this year we're looking at 1,500 people. So it really just grew, and we just went from strength to strength.
And what about you getting involved then, Katie? How did they talk you into it, or did you go and have your mind blown at the event?
Yeah, so the first year I helped out. I think this event is very family friendly, and we all get involved and we pull in, you know, favours from everyone that we can. And obviously the first year was quite small. But even in saying that, being a festival in Ireland, you have to, you know, look forward for things like rain and, you know, make sure that you've got tents, and it gets quite a bit bigger anyway. And there's a lot of work involved. So as the demand was seen from the success of the first year, Mary and Alice both felt that they needed an extra person on board to grow the festival as well, because it is a huge thing to take on. And they both have families. I have a full-time job as well. So between the three of us, we pull all our strengths, and we're able to create the success that it is now today, just getting bigger and bigger each year.
I know you have the most incredible CVs, like yoga studio owner, barrister, primary school teacher, mothers, like you're juggling a lot. So to throw a festival in there, you know, is no small undertaking, as you said, Katie, but there is such an appetite for it, isn't there, Mary? I mean, you sold out your early bird tickets last year in 9 minutes.
We did. We sold out the early bird tickets really, really quick. And last year, our original intention was to have 300 people, which we sold out. Our 2023 event, we had planned on having 300. We sold out 300 really, really quick. So we increased capacity to 500. And then eventually we capped capacity at 1,000. So it was completely unexpected. Alice had just had a baby. I was 39 weeks pregnant at the event last year. So it wasn't our plan at all to have it the size that it was. But just the demand was there. We had the most incredible teachers. We had the support of all of those teachers. We had amazing partners on board last year that we're lucky enough to have on board again this year. And yeah, people just loved the day. There's a real sense of belonging around the day. And like Katie said, we pull on everyone, all of our friends, all of our family, everyone gets a job on the day, our volunteers as well. They were a massive support to us. So I think the demand is there because of maybe the authenticity of the event. People see it as just three girls organising this festival. It's very much grassroots. It's self-funded, it's self-run. And yeah, we're incredibly lucky, I suppose, to have the support that we do. And in turn, the festival is growing. And this year, we're looking forward to welcoming an extra 500 people. So it's exciting.
And I love how you're growing it incrementally as well. You know, you're just letting it grow nicely. I mean, I've no doubt eventually you'll have a bigger festival, but I suppose part of its charm is the amount of people that are there. So tell us what people can expect on the day, Alice.
There's really something for everyone. This is a festival for everyone. It's a family-friendly festival with lots of stuff for kids there, but primarily, I suppose, it is a yoga festival. There's over 100 offerings and lots of them are yoga classes. So whether you want to come and do a really strong class or really challenging and do handstands and arm balances and everything, or you want to do a really slow, mindful day and even just do a couple of yoga classes. Aside from that, I suppose yoga isn't just about the physical practice. It extends beyond that. And so it's really a way of living, a way of being. And I suppose, as I said, we wanted to instill positive mental and physical well-being as well. So there's loads of things like, you know, healing sound baths and, you know, Reiki classes, and there's, you know, drumming classes in the forest, and there's an outdoor spa, which is a new thing we have this year. We had a sauna, an outdoor sauna, the last 2 years, but this year we have a whole spa with two saunas, ice baths, an outdoor hot tub. They're all wood fired and that. And there's loads of food demos, like nutritious food, and talks on mental health, meditation classes. So there's something for everyone. Even if you didn't want to do yoga at all, there'd be lots of things to do during the day.
Yeah, that's amazing.
We also have an artisan market that have lots of sustainable. We're very much conscious that the brands and the crafters and the artists that we're working with, that they share the same values and ethos that we do. So all of our crafters and our artisans that are in the market will have sustainable, for the majority, Irish-made goods as well. So if you don't want to practice yoga, you want to come and get a massage and get some nice food, some nice vegetarian food, and walk through the market, then that's an option as well.
And I think we've come a long way, haven't we, in Ireland particularly. Now, I mean, I say we've come a long way. I don't know whether we're returning to what we once knew, but what would have been considered a bit woo-woo now is becoming more and more mainstream. I'm sure you see it with the people that come. There's a real wide variety of people now interested in coming to an event like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even from the first year, you can see the difference. There's just more and more people interested and more people curious. And that's what's so good about the yoga picnic, is that even if you've never practiced yoga, you can still come, because there's classes for the basic of yoga, but also it instills kind of education throughout your life as well. So you can take it, it's a ripple effect, and it takes it beyond the festival day, and you can learn how to bring that yoga practice into your life. And you could be someone that has practiced for 30 years, or you could be someone that has never tried yoga. And the yoga picnic is a really good opportunity to try out loads of different things, especially if you have never tried it. You can come and, you know, like Alice and Mary said, all the different things that we have, you know, you can have a taster of everything. So it's a really, really nice way to try out different things. But at the same time, we have some of the world's leading teachers coming. We have Adam Hustler, who is coming over from England, and he is a world-renowned teacher. He's a teacher's teacher. So if you're a yoga teacher, you can also come and deepen your practice with him. Or he is also doing workshops for people that have never done yoga as well. So it's just kind of for everybody. So it's a really nice thing about the yoga picnic, is a day for that.
And I think the just in that context, what one thing that we really wanted to focus on this year is putting Ireland on the world stage for yoga festivals. Like, there's big yoga festivals in a lot of different countries, and Ireland really needs one, we felt as well. And so we wanted to put Ireland on the stage, on the world stage for that. And so that's what we've started to develop this year with international teachers. So we have, as Katie mentioned, Adam Hustler coming over from the UK. We have Kagi Dunlop coming over as well from the UK, and Celeste Pereira. So these are really high profile, experienced teachers from the UK that are coming over. We also have Benita Wolf from the US, Sylvia Schneider, who's a chef in Austria. And so we're really trying to, I suppose, put the yoga picnic on the world map for people who will travel to Ireland to have that experience here and experience a yoga festival here, the same way as Irish people might travel to the to the UK to Yoga Fest, or to the US for Yoga Festival. Now people can travel here for this, and it really is kind of a world-class yoga festival now.
And Mary, you touched on the sustainability element, but you're going to have the event powered by electric cars. You have a zero plastic policy. You're giving back to the land. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so this year we're really excited to be partnering with Kia Ireland. They approached us after the event last year, and we had a few conversations with them, and excited to have them on board as one of our partners this year. But they will be powering all of our tents using their EVs, using their electric vehicles, which will massively reduce our need for diesel powered generators. We also have a no single use plastic policy on site. So any of our vendors will be using fully compostable materials, and we encourage people to bring their own coffee cups and water bottles, and we have water on site that people can refill their bottles from as well on the day. So we're really hoping to, as much as possible, because we know the impact, the environmental impact a festival like this can have. So we're hoping to tread lightly and to reduce that impact as much as possible going forward over the next few years.
So it sounds to me like the only problem is, as three yoga teachers, you can't go and enjoy the festival yourselves. You're like flat to the mat. I'm sure you do enjoy it when you can see it all kicking off, and you can see, I mean, I've seen from the videos on your website, it looks like paradise. It looks absolutely gorgeous. You've looked out in the weather, and touch wood, it will continue for you again this time. But it's a different way of enjoying.
Yeah, and I think each of us last year had this moment where we kind of took a second and kind of got goosebumps about the space that was created, that magic that were there, the people that were coming and really enjoying it. And we all kind of had a moment of, you know, been in amongst running around and kind of, you know, we just took a moment to kind of take it all in and appreciate what we have created, and I think we're putting in structures now as well to be able to enjoy it more, that we're working really well together, and we have structures in place that will allow us hopefully to enjoy it more and more as we grow, and as you know, it becomes a better and better festival.
Delegate, yeah. Delegate, girls. That's where it's going. Well, it's taking place on Sunday, the 7th of July in Westmeath. For more information and for tickets, you can go to theyogapicnic.com. Mary Gardner, Katie Harrison and Alice Harrison, thank you so much for coming on, ladies.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you.
Alive and Kicking on News Talk.
Now, David G is a globally recognised mind-body expert and a meditation teacher. After a 20-year career in finance, David began working at the Deepak Chopra Centre, where he trained more than 300,000 people to meditate and 2,500 meditation teachers. Since then, he has gone on to help millions of people to manage their stress, including CEOs, the military, the police force and many others just trying to keep it all going. He is one of my absolute go-tos for a guided meditation, and you literally feel as if he is sitting right beside you with his dog at times, and you are meditating together. I wish I could say he was sitting right beside me now, but he is on the line from the US, and I will gladly make do with that. David G, you are so very welcome.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and I'll be coming to Ireland in a week.
Yes.
So really excited to hang out and bask in the magnificence of Ireland. And it's one of my favorite places to visit and spend time. I've got some bloodline in Ireland, so it's pretty special for me.
Because I mentioned of the millions of people that you have taught to meditate, you also taught Dermot Whelan, who has now made a full jump into the wellness world and has committed himself to making meditation accessible to all. And I know you're with him in Dublin June 14th and 16th. Tickets sold out in a mere minutes. Are there many people like Dermot that you watch go on a real journey from that first day learning to making massive changes in their lives?
Well, there are so many, and so many, obviously, Dermot is the funniest human being on the planet, and so it was an honor to have him as my student. I've worked with India Ari and Ariana Grande, and, you know, so many celebrities, but so many of us, the regular people out there as well. So if you can breathe, you can meditate. If you can breathe, you can lower your stress, you can lower your blood pressure, you can lower your heart rate. There's so many powerful benefits from just taking a breath, which nobody on this planet does enough of. But I'm on a mission. I'm on a mission to share with everyone how easy it is And, you know, there's so many misconceptions and ideas of, you know, what's a meditator and what's meditation, and do you have to cross your legs and sit a certain way or have a certain religion? And no, as long as you're alive, you can meditate.
Well, tell us a bit about you and your journey to meditation. You're a New Yorker originally, which is literally the city of go, go, go. And as I mentioned in the intro, you were working in finance. Was meditation a part of your life then?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Way, way, way back in the day when I was in college, in university, I took an experimental Asian studies course. And this course, it was pretty fascinating. There were 12 of us. We sat in a circle. Our Zen master stood in the corner. We were instructed that when we had a thought, we were told to raise our hand. And in his hand, he carried an 18-inch bamboo stick known as a keisaku. And he would come over when he saw us raise our hand and thwack us on the back. So I only lasted in that school of meditation. In fact, I dropped that course because I just couldn't, I didn't want that association. But I had really found so much balance in my life. It was really a balance thing for me. You know, I can imagine being in school. What do you need most of? You know, a little calm, a little balance, a little tranquility, which is rarely there. And so I continued with things like candle gazing and mindfulness and mantra meditation and all these different types of things. And then I got more deeply involved in the corporate world, and I got involved in finance. And suddenly I realized that I had traded in my, you know, very locked down morning meditation practice. I had traded that in for an early morning trade ride to the World Trade Center. And I had traded in my evening meditation for a nice glass of scotch. And like that, meditation was gone from my life. And so was balance. And that was really the thing where I suddenly realized, oh my, there's a direct correlation. If I do this thing, which doesn't really take much time, you know, it's like brushing your teeth, all these different things that we do that are just so effortless. If I can just figure out a way to make it consistent in my life, then balance will return. And in the wake of 9/11, I was walking past a row of cardboard boxes in southern Manhattan that people were living in. And this hand reached out and grabbed my pant leg. And suddenly this face peered into me and said, "What's going to be on your tombstone?" And that's a fairly reflective question. And that was like a defining moment in my life. What is going to be, you know, why am I here? Why are we all here? You know, what am I here to do? Where can I put my attention? So I went on this quest to truly find the secret of life, the meaning of life. And I traveled to Oxford, England, and hung out with Deepak Chopra for a while, and then left there and headed off to India in search of the guru, and traveled high into the Himalayas and was looking for the Dalai Lama. He wasn't there that day. But I prayed, and I bathed in the Ganges, and I meditated, and I practiced yoga, and I visited the temples, and I did all that stuff. And then one day, while I was laying in a hammock in a cashew forest in southern India, suddenly it hit me. It just hit me. It hit me like a lightning stroke. I was reading this ancient book called the Bhagavad Gita. Oppenheimer read that book. If you've seen the movie, you know, by Killian, played by Killian, you know, Oppenheimer actually read this ancient text. And essentially, there's a line in there that's, you know, it's a conversation between the protagonist and God, supposedly. And he says, like, how am I supposed to live my life? How am I supposed to walk through the world? And God replies, establish yourself in the present moment and then perform action. And that hit me just like a ton of bricks. It's like, let me live my life coming from a place of stillness first, and then I can rise up. Then I can speak words. Then I can perform actions. And from that day on, I just really got on a mission to explore meditation, to study meditation, to share it with others. And that's why prior to COVID, I was coming to Ireland every couple of years for Sirsha 1 and Sirsha 2. These were meditation retreats. And you know, that's why I think we can all do it. It doesn't matter what your religion is. It doesn't matter what your belief system is. It doesn't matter what your politics is. We all have stress. And whether you're a parent or a child or somebody, you know, in the work environment, there are really easy, scientifically proven, evidence-based techniques to help us calm the mind, get a little still, and make a better decision.
And you made the move from New York to California to work then in meditation. And I think in LA, there's been a more of a wellness move. They've been a bit ahead of the curve. But have you noticed a change since then, over the decades, of the openness people have now to meditation?
Oh, I definitely think so. And California is a kooky place. I'm trying to figure out like what's a comparable place, but it's pretty much like, you know, moving from the East Coast of Ireland to the West Coast, and or maybe to Cork, down to Cork, and you know, suddenly there's people. It's just probably who don't have resistance, or they're in so much pain. That was really my challenge. The reason I went to India was to discover the guru. And that's when I got there, I suddenly realized, oh, the guru rests inside. It rests inside all of us. And I think as more famous people like Dermot, like so many other, you know, amazing beings out there who are either we're paying attention to them on social media or in movies or you know, even, you know, someone like Bressy, you know, coming out and saying meditation can really help with mental health. These are the types of things that people go, oh, well, if Bressy does it, if Dermot does it, you know, then maybe I can do it too. And so I think people used to do it in secret, or if you did it, you were a hippie or, you know, some kooky person. And now we realize it's mainstream and it needs to be woven into your life. If you're looking for your life to be more fulfilling or more successful, meditation really can be a foundational element. And, you know, it's just like going to the gym. If you go to the gym consistently, you'll probably feel better and look better. And if you go to the meditation gym, which you don't have to even get in your car and drive anywhere, you can just do it in your bed. I call it meditation. Then you can also wake up and cultivate that muscle. And you bring that into every other moment. When someone pokes you or triggers you or says something harsh or mean to you, or when things aren't going your way, there's a place for you to come back to sort of recenter yourself and then move back into the world.
And you're passionate about working with people who work in high stress environments. And I think a lot of people will say, well, that's me, whether you're a stay-at-home parent or working in retail. Life is stressful. There's a lot coming at us now. And you've worked with everyone from CEOs to the military. So tell me a little bit about that, people who work in high-pressure environments.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of us, there's a lot of pressure on us. Let me just share what I believe is a really powerful definition of stress. Stress is when the demands of the moment are perceived as greater than the resources we have. So when we experience what we think is coming into us is bigger than us and we don't know how to handle it, that creates stress. And when we see it as a challenge, that's actually invigorating and uplifting and inspiring. You know, going out to play a sport or play a game or have a presentation or host, even just hosting a family over to your house. Those are challenges. But we have this thing wired into our brain from like 20,000 years ago that when we sense a threat, all these hormones and chemicals surge into us. We call it the fight-flight response. And so that's one of those scenarios where if we can see things as challenges rather than threats, we can make a more conscious choice in that moment. So I work with a lot of different companies, and it's really a powerful team building exercise as well, because again, it's that trickle down process. If the CEO or the president or the head of a department meditates or finds value in it, then the people who work with them can also find value in that as well. And so there's some really, really easy techniques. I'd like to share just one right here so that everyone have like a powerful takeaway just in this moment. So think about something that's been bothering you for a couple of days or disturbing you just for a couple of days. Don't go too deep. This isn't therapy. And then as you think about that thing, maybe there's a person attached to it. Maybe someone was supposed to do something they didn't, or something was supposed to happen. It didn't turn out that way. And now close your eyes and through your nose, take a long, slow, deep breath in and watch that breath as it goes down into your belly. And when it gets to your belly, hold it there and watch it. Keep holding it and witnessing it. Keep holding it and observe it. Now release it and watch it as it moves up through your chest, out through your nose or mouth. And then hold that breath out and keep watching it and keep witnessing it as that breath dissipates into the ether. And now open your eyes and breathe normally. And that was a mere 16 seconds, 16 seconds. And in those 16 seconds, if you were playing along, and I know many of you were not thinking about that thing that I just asked you to think about. Now, you may be thinking about it now, and I apologize for that, to bring it into your awareness. But for those 16 seconds, you were in the present moment. You were watching your breath. You were holding and watching. And just as it flowed through you, we're talking about, you know, a quarter of a minute. So if we did it 4 times, that would be a minute. If we did it 20 times, that's 5 minutes. That's a meditation practice. Something as simple as that can ground you and can settle you. And so just having that technique, and I would suggest to people, put it on your phone. You know, maybe every two hours you have an alarm that, you know, obviously because of this show, we would say, put on Simple Minds, or have Alive and Kicking pop on every 2 hours at the top of the hour, and then just stop. And 16 seconds, you just insert that 16 second break into every 2 hours. And that's going to help calm you. It's also going to help entrain your mind and train your brain. And we know there's so many magnificent meditation studies, and some people really need. When I'm working with the military, I've worked with the Garda, and I've worked with NATO and Dutch Special Forces and Marines. So there are people in these high stress, high power positions, and you don't have to be in the military or work with the Guard. But just having the pressures of the day to day, maybe people report to you, maybe there's a big project that's looming, maybe there's a bunch of family issues. If you can just integrate a 16-second practice every couple of hours, it will train your brain. It will actually start firing different neurons in your brain, and you'll train yourself to be a little calmer.
And what about you now? So many decades in, and this is very much who you are. I assume you've gone on from the 16 seconds. How long do you meditate for on a daily basis?
Oh, well, I've been cultivating it for a bunch of years, so I'm not trying to shame anybody with my practice, because it's aspirational. I think we can all start with 16 seconds and move it up. And I'll share another technique for the afternoon in a moment. That's only 5 minutes. But I typically meditate for 30 minutes in the morning. And part of that is, you know, I have a little prayer practice. I have a gratitude practice. Woven into that, I ask some really powerful questions, like, what am I grateful for? And then I set an intention based on, like, what's a state of mind? What's a trait or a characteristic or a quality that I'd like to embrace at a higher level? So today it might be patience. The next day it might be inspiration. The next day it might be forgiveness. The next day it might be self-compassion or self-kindness. So we can show up exactly with that. And just like planting the seed for, like when you get into your car and you tap into the GPS, where are you going to go? You don't have to go there, but there are reminders along the way that you've perhaps gone off course. So I like planting some seeds during my meditation. That whole practice takes about a half hour. And there is a mindfulness component to it, where I'm either watching my breath or repeating a mantra. But I want to share this really powerful technique that everyone should do every single afternoon, somewhere between noon and dinner time.
Okay.
And everyone's got 5 minutes. And I call this the let go meditation. Because if we think about it, we're just absorbing energy and content and information and all these thoughts. We have 60,000 to 80,000 thoughts a day. They're just pouring into us. And sometimes we're taking stuff personally, and sometimes we're just, you know, just not feeling it for the day, or we've been ruminating about a conversation, just not letting it go, or holding a grudge against someone. So how long we've been doing that? Probably most of our lives. We just keep ingesting and taking that in and absorbing all that stuff in, but we don't have a release process. We don't have a sesha process. So if sometime between noon and dinner time, ideally before you sit down for dinner or start to make dinner or go out dinner, if you can just take 5 minutes and silently repeat let as you inhale and go as you exhale. You close your eyes, you sit there, and it's that you can use that as a mantra. Let go. Let go. And that no matter what comes into your mind, your football team could come into your mind, let go. That conversation could come into your mind, let go. That grievance or that grudge or something in your life, let go. And I have found that to be, after you do it for 2 days, you'll feel the difference. Instead of sitting down to dinner and venting or telling everyone, oh, you wouldn't believe how horrible my day was, or you wouldn't believe what happened. Instead, you sit down and everything's just a little lighter. And then you bring that into your evening and then into your bedtime and then into your sleep time and then into your dream time. And you wake up the next morning just a little bit lighter. So between 16 seconds and the let go meditation, I think everyone here has powerful tools to begin your journey to living a less stress, more fulfilling life.
Well, some brilliant take homes for people. And you do have the most incredible story and voice. There are lots of guided meditations on David's website for free and on YouTube. You can go to davidg.com, J-double-I spells G. David G, it's been an honour to chat with you. You're often in my ears, so it's been lovely to ask you some questions. I was lucky enough to grab a couple of tickets for the gig in Dublin, so I'm looking forward to seeing yourself and Dermot Whelan in action.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to that. That's great. That's great. Well, I look forward to meditating with you, because Dermot and I have, you know, we're going to, it's a combination of sitting down and stand-up comedy. So sit down meditation, stand-up comedy. And thank you so much for inviting me to be part of Alive and Kicking. What a great show. And I'm so grateful to be here.
David G, thank you so, so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
So that's it for Live and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Aidan McKelvey, and to Hugo Da Silva Scott, who was on sound. And thanks to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.